and welcome to Introduction to Meteorology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa with Dr. Jennifer Griswold. Thank you for joining us. In today's lecture, we're going to finish our lesson on why the wind blows. In preparation for today's lecture, you should have read through the second half of Chapter 6 from the Aaron's text. Last lecture, we talked about atmospheric pressure and started to talk about why the wind blows. We discussed the pressure gradient force and mentioned that Coriolis and friction were important too. Today, we're going to finish our discussion of why the wind blows, focusing on the effect of the Coriolis force and friction on wind direction and speed. During our last podcast, we talked about the factors that affect winds. Remember that if the Earth did not rotate and if there was no friction, wind would flow in a straight line from high to low pressure. We can summarize this by stating that the main forces that affect wind that we will be discussing today are the pressure gradient force, Coriolis, and friction. In our previous podcast, we found that the pressure gradient force is driven by horizontal differences in pressure. We learned that a change in pressure over a large distance gives us a small pressure gradient force, and a change in pressure over a small distance gives us a large pressure gradient force. We also discussed how the pressure gradient force moves relative to isobars and discovered that the pressure gradient force is at right angles to isobars. If we add in the effect of Coriolis along with the pressure gradient force, things change. The Coriolis force results from the rotation of the Earth. It causes the PGF, or pressure gradient force, to cross isobars not at right angles. Specifically, winds curve to the right in the northern hemisphere and the left in the southern hemisphere due to the influence of the Coriolis force due to rotation of the Earth. Again, objects in motion above the surface, including air molecules, deflect to the right in the northern hemisphere and to the left in the southern hemisphere. As an example, consider a rocket fired from the North Pole towards a target at the equator. In two scenarios, we can consider a non-rotating Earth and a rotating Earth. In the non-rotating Earth case, the rocket would travel in a straight line to the target. However, in the rotating Earth case, we would miss the target if we expect it to go straight. This is because the Earth rotates at about 15 degrees per hour. Even though the rocket travels in a straight line in the air, the path that it traces on the surface below appears to curve to the right in the northern hemisphere. Thus, the Coriolis force always deflects a moving body, in this case the wind, to the right in the northern hemisphere. It only affects wind direction and not speed. The Coriolis force is affected by wind speed, such that the stronger the wind, the greater the deflecting force. The Coriolis force is highly latitude dependent and is strongest at the poles and non-existent at the equator. Latitudinal dependence and wind speed ultimately determine the magnitude of the Coriolis force. Wind can blow close to the surface or high above the surface. When wind blows close to the surface, it is affected by friction. When it is aloft, it is not affected by friction. We'll talk about both cases, starting first with the airflow high above the surface. When winds are aloft, there is no friction, so we only have to worry about the pressure gradient force and Coriolis force affecting our wind. An air parcel is at equilibrium only if the pressure gradient force acts in the opposite direction to the Coriolis force so that there is no net force on the air parcel. This means that high above the surface, without friction, the pressure gradient force is balanced by the Coriolis force, resulting in wind that blows parallel to isobars. When isobars are relatively straight, the wind blows parallel to them and is known as geostrophic flow. Again, geostrophic flow is defined as a theoretical horizontal wind blowing in a straight path, parallel to the isobars or contours at a constant speed. The geostrophic wind results when the Coriolis force exactly balances the horizontal pressure gradient force. Now, in the case of curved flow, like the bullseye patterns we talked about in the last lecture, we have a different term. Curved flow parallel to isobars is called a gradient wind and is what we expect to see when considering high and low pressure systems aloft. Remember, the speed of the wind is dependent on how close the isobars are to each other. If we move closer to the surface to consider the wind, we'll have to take friction into account on top of the pressure gradient force and Coriolis force. Friction affects air at the surface more than air aloft. We apply the effect of friction to winds within the lowest 1.5 kilometers of the atmosphere. Friction always acts in the direction opposite the direction of motion. If we start with geostrophic or gradient flow and add in friction, we notice that friction causes the parcel to slow down. This causes Coriolis to decrease in strength. Remember, the speed of the wind determines in part the strength of the Coriolis force. Thus, friction causes wind to lean towards the direction of the pressure gradient force. Let's think about it another way. The addition of friction causes the wind to lean towards the pressure gradient force or in the direction of the low pressure in both hemispheres. Remember, because the Coriolis force pulls wind to the right in the northern hemisphere and to the left in the southern hemisphere, we see opposite wind directions when comparing the northern and southern hemispheres. This causes the wind to cross the isobars in predictable ways. When we think of surface winds for high and low pressure systems, we can predict certain wind patterns based on the inclusion of friction, Coriolis, and the pressure gradient force. In the northern hemisphere, wind patterns around high pressure systems are anticyclonic, divergent, and clockwise. In the northern hemisphere, wind patterns around low pressure systems are cyclonic, convergent, and counterclockwise. They are reversed when considering southern hemisphere wind patterns around low and high pressure centers. Remember, anticyclonic is clockwise and cyclonic is counterclockwise. High pressures have air spiraling out away from the high because air goes from high to low, while low pressures have air spiraling in towards the center of the low, causing convergence. Let's review this idea of convergence again. Movement of air can cause variations in pressure. When we have a net flow of air into a region, we call this convergence. When we have a net flow of air out of a region, we call this divergence. In both cases, it results in vertical flow. When we have convergence at the surface, air rises and ultimately results in divergence aloft, while divergence at the surface is related to sinking air due to convergence aloft. There are additional factors that can lead to vertical airflow. Friction can cause convergence and divergence as well. For example, when air moves from the smooth ocean to the rough land, the wind slows down. This results in convergence as air piles up upstream, like on a highway with construction. When air goes from land to ocean, you see divergence and subsidence. Mountains can also hinder the flow of air. As air passes over, it is compressed vertically, causing horizontal spreading or divergence aloft. After going over onto the lee side, air experiences vertical expansion, causing horizontal convergence. This has many implications for U.S. weather, considering the orientation of the main mountain ranges and prevailing wind directions. Now, you might not know what prevailing wind directions are, so let's have a little chat about that. Prevailing wind is the name given to the wind direction most often observed during a given time period. Prevailing winds can impact the climate of a region and are helpful for city planning. For example, if you know the direction of the prevailing wind for a certain city, you can determine the best location for power plants and garbage dumps so the pollution and smells don't affect your city's population. We use wind roses to show us information about dominant wind directions. A wind rose is a diagram that represents the percentage of time the wind blows from different directions. To finish up this lecture, I'd like to quickly talk about the different types of instruments used to measure wind. The four I'd like to mention are wind vanes, anemometers, aerovanes, and wind profilers. A wind vane is the simplest instrument for obtaining wind direction. An anemometer gives you wind speed but not direction. An aerovane gives you both wind speed and direction. A wind profiler is a Doppler radar capable of measuring the turbulent eddies that move within the wind. Because of this, it is able to provide a vertical picture of wind speed and direction. That finishes up our introductory lecture on wind at the surface and aloft. Next class, we'll talk about the local wind systems, such as sea breezes, monsoons, and more. Thanks for listening, and I hope you join us again for our next podcast. Goodbye!